not the EFL. It's the Football League podcast retiring the golden boot in honour of Toto Schillaci. Coming up, Schumacher no longer in pole position as narcissism is in vogue at Stoke. Plenty of penalties in Preston. Yet more derbies, but very little derby. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. How you doing, listener? It's a Thursday show for us this week. This is probably going to be the sweet spot for us for the very technical and professional reason that it fits in best with our respective childcare arrangements. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined, of course, by my two podcasting pals. How you doing, Adrian Clark?
I'm all right. Yeah, all good. All good. No childcare issues for me at the minute. But yeah, Sam's found this sweet spot and we're going to make it work, aren't we?
So, Sam Parkin, we're expecting lots of energy and endeavour from you as ever today. Have you had a nice week following the football in the Football League and beyond?
I think I've been to Yorkshire and Devon since we last spoke. Oof. So I wouldn't say I'm full of beans. I'm still a little bit fatigued, but looking forward to a more sedate weekend ahead at loads of footy.
Yeah. Always. Remember, you can follow us on social media. On X, we are at EFL What the, everywhere else, we are What the EFL. If you could leave us a nice review, a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we would greatly appreciate it as it helps other EFL fans find the show. We are also delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season. And to celebrate that, Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers to sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. I'll put the link in the description of the pod as well. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. You can check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. Right, we've got loads on the agenda today. We'll start with a bit of midweek chat. And the week started, Adrian, with the battle for American supremacy League One chapter. It was Birmingham who took it, beating Wrexham 3-1. Almost as much focus on who was in the stands as to what happened on the pitch in this match. We're going to talk more Birmingham later. This fell in a nice sweet spot, didn't it, for the EFL, I think, in that they could get all eyes on this fixture. And it delivered with some decent goals and a big win for Birmingham.
Definitely, yeah. We'll talk about Birmingham later, but yeah, there was a sense of occasion about it, and I love that. And obviously, it was a huge crowd. You know, pretty much a full house. Beckham was there, wasn't he? Among others, sat next to Tom Brady. And it was a great advert for the third tier of English football. I mean, it was a proper game. Wouldn't have been out of place in the Championship from Wrexham's end. They were unbelievable in the first 15, 20 minutes, scored a goal. They were popping the ball around in a way that I didn't know that they could. And then it sort of fell into the pattern of Birmingham having the ball and Wrexham then struggled to get a look in. And in the end, they were outplayed by a really, really impressive Blues team. So, yeah, I just wonder if in the long run, this kind of experience or this match might work against Phil Parkinson. That's my only fear for him, because you saw there obviously two ambitious ownerships going head to head. One that spent a lot more clearly, but the style of football, I'm sure that Wrexham's owners looked at that and thought, oh, kind of wish our team played a little bit more like that. Do you know what I mean? And I think it would have been a realization on their part that we do need to maybe invest more heavily to go to the next level, and that we do maybe need to tweak our style to become more of a dominant team, a team that can look after the ball a little bit better. So I hope that's not the case, but I do think in the long run they might have to evolve their style of play, Wrexham.
You do continue your campaign to get Phil Parkinson the sack before the end of the season.
Oh, that's so hard. I haven't said that at all. That is a ridiculous thing to say. I really like him, but I do think, yeah, that they're good at what they do, but they might need more.
Rob McElhenney, this is not Tweet of the Week, but he said afterwards, didn't get the result we hoped for, but wow, that at Wrexham AFC away end support was 3 fireworks emojis. Thanks at Tom Brady and at BCFC for being such great hosts. You got a hell of a side. See you in January. Welsh flag emoji, British flag emoji. Thanks for that, Rob. In terms of the Carabao Cup, not many shocks around. Preston not Fulham out, though, on penalties after an epic shootout that finished 16-15. Ryan Ledson with the winning spot kick in the longest penalty penalty competition in the history of the League Cup. Stoke and Fleetwood shootout, less impressive, finished 2-1 to the Potters, which is somewhat embarrassing. Sam, you watched Leighton Orient go down to Brentford and probably didn't draw too many conclusions from it.
I think that I saw a lot of good from Leighton Orient, similar to how I felt about them the start of last season when they weren't winning games and weren't getting points. Slow starters in the last campaign, and obviously that's been the case again this one with just their obviously solitary win coming up Reading the other day. But 10 changes from Richie Wellens, which was obviously, yeah, the kind of headline news when you arrive and you start going through the teams and what have you. It's a big night, you know, going to a Premier League team for League One footballers. There would be the hope, I would suggest, from everyone in the squad that they get a game irrelevant of the ambitions and the priorities of the manager and the club. So that was a little bit of a surprise. I still saw a League One side that play really good football. I said during the commentary that, you know, I see similarities between Thomas Frank and Richie Wellens in that neither of them are too precious to do what's best to win an outcome of a football match. If they need to go direct, I think they do it. I think they change their tactics. I think we've seen Brentford do that over the years. They're not always playing through the thirds. It's been very much different to that on occasions, using a long throw, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought on this night, Orient did play some really good football. Excellent footballers, even in their, obviously, almost reserve side. Lewis Warrington, someone we've spoken about on the podcast before. Beautiful footballer, lovely range of passing. The loanees, they seem to obviously have a good track record of getting Spurs loanees. No one more high profile than old Harry Kane once upon a time. Good goalkeeper in Keeley, made his first appearance. And Donnelly, I liked, a kind of number 10 on loan from Spurs as well. But I think so often in these games, we'll all have watched the games this week and seeing them over the years, the quality of the Premier League, you know, in the final third and the individuals, they just need one or two chances and they punish you. And this was the case, Orient were in the game, defensively not quite good enough. And Brentford get themselves three goals. Carvalho, the main threat and the main source of creativity for the home side. But on this showing, absolutely, as I did last year, I would see Orient climbing the table and potentially improving on that 11th place finish last season.
Premier League players, Sam, leads me nicely on to Barnsley and Adrian's namesake, Daryl, who was not happy with his team after they were walloped at Old Trafford. If I hear one of my players tell me Premier League players are poor when watching a game, I'll give them a slap because they were miles off it, he said. A 7-0 defeat at Old Trafford. I mean, you can usually right off a loss at a team two divisions higher above you. But when it gets above four, I always think, this is problematic. And that's surely going to have some knock-on effect for Barnsley.
It might do, yeah. I mean, he talked about he'll slap his players. They did get slapped, didn't they? I mean, properly slapped. Yeah, he's talked before about sort of a bit of a soft underbelly, conceding goals too easily. It's not hurting the players enough to concede goals. And yeah, if you aren't resilient in matches like this, you're going to get tonked. And that's what happened to them. And it unfortunately for them, it came off the back of a 3-0 loss in the previous game at Stevenage. So it's a horrendous week for the players. And what should have been a win-win situation where they, you know, even if they get beat, they go out, you know, with a little bit of credit, has kind of become a bit of a disaster. Because now, you know, Clark's furious. He's a Man U fan, remember? We had him on the pod. He's a massive Man United supporter. So he would have been really embarrassed by this. And I think he might shake things up a little bit behind the scenes there. So, yeah, they've got to respond, haven't they? I think they've got Burton away this weekend, and I certainly got Burton. So I expect to see a reaction because yeah, it turned into a nightmare for them.
All right. Well, you mentioned shakeups behind the scene. He's lost one of his coaching staff this weekend. Dean Whitehead is going to join the new Stoke City revolution. And we'll talk about that next when we get into some news. Right, before we start with Stoke, Reading's takeover is off. Former Wickham owner Rob Kuhig was the man in pole position, but a breakdown in negotiations means that's not going to happen now. A club statement said alternative options would now be pursued. The statement says Mr. Dye remains committed to the sale of Reading Football Club and provisions are in place to fund the club until a transaction is completed. BBC Radio Berkshire reporting that money from a sell-on clause for Michael Olise is what's keeping the club going at the minute, which is an extraordinary situation to be in. They've essentially dissolved their women's team, who were supposed to be in the Championship but have had to go down to the fifth tier. It is not good. We wish them all the best and hope that there's a speedy resolution. Elsewhere, Stoke City sacked Stephen Schumacher after just 9 months in charge on Monday. They sit 13th in the table after 2 wins and 3 defeats from their opening 5 league games. He's been replaced by Norwich coach Narcis Pelac. The 36-year-old was in the stands for Tuesday's Carabao win against Fleetwood, officially announced on Wednesday. Started life in England with Carlos Corbrand at Huddersfield, and from there he joined David Wagner at Carrow Road. He said, "I know the league, I know the opposition, and I already know about our players. The level of squad is good. I believe in them, and I'll create a playing style that suits their qualities." Let's deal with the Schumacher side of things first then, shall we? Sammy was their sixth boss in the last 6 years. He released a long statement about how disappointed he was to have lost the job. Feels like a little bit harsh from Stoke, but they're in this hire and fire him circle now and trying to find a way out of it, I guess.
I think it feels incredibly harsh. I don't think it's been a disastrous start to the season by any stretch. Obviously, they didn't play well at all at Oxford, and the 1-0 potentially flattered them as well. I think Create Much and Oxford far and away the better side. So that's not going to go down well with the hierarchy. But it feels like maybe this has been something that's been decided prior to that. They must have been sourcing a replacement. They must probably not think that maybe Stephen Schumacher is capable of doing the job that they desire. That's my take on it. I think he's a really talented young coach. He's a really good guy. You know, I've got a lot of time for him. So I'm disappointed that it's ended this way, especially off the back of winning at Argyle's old club the other day, which would have been, you know, a real stressful, big afternoon for him going down there and getting the job done. Mm. And the way they've started this season, you would have anticipated him being given a better run at it. But I think, you know, the problems at Stoke, obviously, over the years, this, in terms of the squad churn initially, the amount of different managers that they've had, different directors of football, and now you've got John Walters calling the shots. It's a little bit odd because, yeah, no doubt he has got an incredible affiliation with the club, John Walters, but we don't know at all what he's going to be capable of in this type of role. But having seen the interview with Pelac last night, he's incredibly impressive. I know managers can say the right things when they're in front of the journalists and what have you. But, you know, I liked a lot of the content of what he was saying. Sounds like he can be incredibly diligent and detailed as he goes into his first number one gig. So we'll see how it goes. But many have tried and failed before. And I suppose when we're talking about Stoke as a squad and a plan and a style of play, we still don't really know what that is. So he's going to have to hone in on that and try and get results, and results quickly.
Yeah, you did hear that right, listener. It was news to me as well. But Jonathan Walters is the technical director of Stoke. Ryan Shawcross was the caretaker for the Fleetwood game. Dean Whitehead's back. They're really getting the band back together. He talks a good game, Clarkie Walters. He said, "Across the extensive dialogue I've had across football, including at the highest levels of the game, Narcis is one of the most respected and sought-after coaches around." Have we maybe found the cause of this then, that there's somebody new in a position of power who wants to put his stamp on things and appoint his own man? And I don't know, maybe he and Schumacher saw eye to eye, maybe they didn't, but Walters wants to make a mark, and he's done that quickly by doing the flash thing of appointing a young manager.
It happens in all industries, doesn't it, when a new manager comes in. They want to make an impression, they want to bring their own people in. So we probably shouldn't be too surprised. Schumacher didn't deserve the sack here. You know, they'd won at Plymouth. You know, they'd won 5-0 recently at Middlesbrough in the League Cup. Yes, it was a poor performance at Oxford, but come on. Maybe opportunity. Maybe it feels to me as if John Walters has got to know this Narcis Pelac over a little period of time. He's clearly been sounding people out about future managers ahead of last week. So, and he's decided to pull the trigger very, very early on. It's a very ruthless decision, very ruthless. And if it doesn't work, then Stoke fans will let him know about it. But yeah, look, we wish this new guy the best of luck. He's got good pedigree, we know that. Articulate, yeah. But it's different, isn't it, when you're the main manager. And all of the managers that have come in at Stoke, the many, many managers, they've all talked a great game at the start. And for whatever reason, it hasn't really click for them. So yeah, let's see what he can do. I feel that this Stoke squad is one of the strongest Stoke squads for many, many seasons. I think this squad is actually capable of finishing in the top half, and I think that Schumacher would have got them into the top half. So if Palach doesn't do that, then it's a move that will have backfired. But let's give him a chance. Schumacher won't be out of work long. Very, very talented, hungry, passionate coach that I felt was slowly but surely getting the club on the right track.
Yeah, I think it's just important to say as well, like, you would never, I don't think, criticise Stephen Schumacher, even though it was Stoke and it's been so difficult for managers to get their feet under the table there. I wouldn't criticise him for making that jump and taking that opportunity. It was maybe just the wrong club. I think it was natural that he went to a championship club that had bigger aspirations and a bigger budget to work with, absolutely. But I just think, given what's gone before, it was just such a gamble. But I wouldn't criticise him. And the other thing I want to say was Dean Whitehead. I did my badges with him and he was really impressive, even though he was still playing at the time on the grass as a coach. And I think he's been first team coaches at various clubs around the vicinity of Stoke. So, yeah, I would expect him to go in and be an asset there because, he seemed to know what he was doing. And he's had a varied and quite a successful coaching career to date as well. So he'll be someone good for the new guy to lean on.
Yeah, and good luck to Stephen Schumacher when he takes the Plymouth job again in December. Speaking of managerial moves, Carlisle have today, as we record, announced the appointment of Mike Williamson as the new head coach, replacing Paul Simpson, who's left MK Dons in order to make the switch. Adrian, was he jumping before he's pushed here? He wants to go back up north, but it hasn't been going well at MK, so you can kind of understand the move.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. It'd be interesting to know if he applied for it or whether he was headhunted or whether he dropped in a little application on the sly. You know, I think, well, MK Dons are under new ownership as well, aren't they? So again, he's not their man. And obviously they've had a really underwhelming start to the season, MK Dons. And I think maybe they were one or two defeats away from making a change. So I wouldn't have blamed him for sounding Carlisle out. He's a northern lad. Carlisle have money. They have a new ownership themselves, and they're willing to spend that money. So, and the other thing, this is going to sound disrespectful, but it is. I don't mean it like this because I don't have any beef with MK Dons. You know, it's so long ago. You know, it's water under the bridge and all that. I just think, having been there for that playoff semi-final, you know, a huge night and so few fans really coming out to see them, it can be quite soulless. It's really hard to generate a real buzz around Stadium MK. And, you know, it's not mission impossible, but it's a tough gig. At Carlisle, you know, where everyone who lives in the area follows Carlisle, I think there's a real passion for it. And if he can get things working, it could be quite an exciting period for the club. He's a coup for Carlisle, no doubt about that. I think he's a very, very good manager who'll implement an attractive style of play and probably some winning football.
Quite a low bar as well, isn't it, Sam? I mean, he goes into a club that's won once in all comps this season, starts away at your old club, Swindon. That's probably not a bad fixture for him to kick off with.
No, although, you know, Swindon have turned a little bit of a corner. Yeah, it's interesting the timing, isn't it? I mean, off the back of that defeat at AFC Wimbledon, they've been terrible away from home. I still thought and would think that MK Dons would have improved under Mike Williamson. I saw as much when I saw them early part of the season, a decent performance. I think the fans can get a little bit irate, especially at that level, if it doesn't come off and you're playing all that pretty football. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the reality of the modern game, especially when you go further down the level. So there's definitely teething problems with a bit of a new side this year and lost Max Dean, for example, back end of last season and a few other starters. So they will improve. It'll be interesting to see some of the Carlisle lads trying to execute that style of football if it is a complete sea change overnight. But they have signed good quality. I went back to the last window, I think last January, when the new ownership, I think it was complete by then, but they had a bit of a go in January. And that's, you know, obviously a product of that Paul Simpson's been under probably greater pressure this season. But they've got some decent players, decent midfield players, decent forward players, Carlisle, and they've signed in all departments. It would just be interesting how quickly he can shift them from, I would suggest, not being a particularly heavy possession side to what Mike Williamson has been to this date. But yeah, interesting, really interesting to seeing Carlisle just going about it a completely different way, pretty unique for the level. And let's see what he can do with a bit of a blank canvas and a decent budget.
Yeah, good luck to him. As I say, Swindon, first up for them. Next up for us, it's our best of the week. Okay, I've got team of the week this week, and I've gone for AFC Wimbledon, who won the Not a Derby Derby against MK Dons. It just continues their brilliant season so far. I love that they did it with 26% possession, because that feels very old Wimbledon and what they would have done in this fixture. The opening goal came from an indirect free kick in the box. You simply never see that situation result in a goal. And it was scored by Miles Hippolyte. And we've not done nearly enough content on the fact that his name is Miles Hippolyte so far. Callum May got his brace as well. First for the club. They've only lost once all season, as I say, and they've got a cup tie against Newcastle to look forward to next week. So AFC Wimbledon, in my view, very worthy of the title.
Good choice. Yeah, the indirect free kick in the box, like, you never see
never,
goals from
ever,
it.
Ever. I think that might be the first one I've ever seen.
But weirdly, it took me right back to a moment. And I know this is like, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I was involved with the England under 18s when I was younger. I played for England youth team. And I remember in training, we practiced free kicks inside the box, like a part of like, sort of in-depth prep, and I was the guy that was on them. So I was having to work on it on the train. And I never did it ever again. I don't think I ever took one in an actual match. So it was a remarkable goal.
And not your goal of the week though, Adrian.
No, that goes to Yuki Ahashi. I mean, he had two contenders in the top five, that's for sure. He curled one in on the run, which he made look really effortless, straight in the top corner of his right foot. But it's his second goal in Blackburn's win against Bristol City. It's a counter-attack, full length for the pitch. He gets the ball on the right wing. He travels at pace. And I just love the little dummy. Just a little, throws a shoulder, ducks inside his man really nicely. And then the curler is exquisite. He curls it from outside the post. It goes right into the postage stamp. We've just bought Ted for his 7th birthday the world's smallest top bin ring for our goal in the garden. It would have hit that. It would have gone in the world's smallest top bin net right in the top corner. That's how good it was. So, yeah, he looks a player, doesn't he? Ahashi. He's on fire for Blackburn, who are having a great start to the season. So well played him.
Yeah, Sammy who? Sammy Parkin, who's your player of the week, please?
Well, I was going to do something really unnecessary and give you a cluster of players, because I was just looking at the results last night and going through one or two things, and there was loads of subs that came on and got two goals, bizarrely, which I think is a no mean feat. So I was going to go for these chaps, but I think unanimously we feel that we've got to give West Bromwich Albion a little bit of respect, considering their lofty positions and the way that they're performing at the moment. So, I mean, if you score two worldies in one game and you get a 10 out of 10 on, I think it was whoscored.com, Alex Mowat is getting the recognition that he deserves this afternoon. So I got involved in a little bit of digging. Most touches, most tackles, 93% pass success rate, most interceptions. This geezer was a monster at Fratton Park, and two beautiful, beautiful goals. So he gets the accolade, but it could quite easily be Fellows at the moment every week. His relationship alone with Madger is just incredible. Love that first goal. The cleverness from Fellows to make the bit of movement. I think it was Ogilvy who was just sleeping to a degree, gets in. And Madger as well is the best one-touch finisher currently performing in the EFL. He is outstanding. Either foot, headers. So West Brom, we know they've got a good defence. We know they've got a top manager. And all of a sudden, they haven't half got some rhythm going the other way. So Mowat, the main man, but West Brom firing.
Definitely. On marks out of 10, 10 out of 10 is obviously ridiculous from who scored. But just in case we were going to talk about the Coventry Spurs game, and I've seen bits of the game, I didn't see watch the whole game like you, Matt. But I noticed in the Coventry Telegraph that Andy Turner, the journalist for Coventry, he has taken to giving 7.5/8 out of 10 marks. He can't decide between a 7.5 and an 8, so he's gone for the slash in between. He's gone for some straight on the nose, half mark. I think half marks in general are a little bit of a cop-out anyway, but to almost go to a quarter mark, Matt, I think it's a disgrace, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it all sort of underlines the utter pointlessness of it. Yeah, all I meant to say about that game was it was nice to see Nottingham Forest class of 2022 come off the bench and win it for Spurs in Jed Spence and Brennan Johnson. All right, they will not be featuring in our preview section, which comes next. And we'll start with the game which is never referred to as the Sam Parkin Derby at Loftus Road, where Parkin's boyhood club Queen's Park Rangers take on Millwall, where tales of that 7-game, 4-goal lone spell back at the turn of the millennium still echo down the halls of the Den. We'll start with QPR though, Clarkie, and you're looking after them, beaten by Palace in midweek. Only one league win this season. I've written it's a mid-table start from a mid-table team destined to finish in mid-table. Would that be about right?
You're probably not far off, but yeah, probably not. Let's just first pay homage to the greatest scramble in the history of football last weekend at Hillsborough. I mean, Alfie Lloyd's goal. How long was the scramble going on for, boys? I'm saying
it's the best, worst goal
seconds.
Of all time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what? There's a really good scramble involving one of the teams we're going to discuss a little bit later. It's not quite as good, but I mean, it was incredible, wasn't it? The one at Hillsborough. There were 17 handballs in there as well.
It was a shocker, but yeah, I absolutely loved it. Look, QPR have got to start better, haven't they? They conceded first in three of 5 games. But interestingly, they haven't lost any of those games where they have conceded first, the Hoops. So they sort of scrapped it out at Sheffield Wednesday. Did the same at Bramall Lane. And they won, of course, at Luton. They turned things around there. So there's a bit of character about this Queen's Park Rangers side. So that's definitely something for them to build on. Set play, this feels like a bit of a set piece derby. I'm looking at some of the numbers. Millwall had 41 shots from set plays already, the most, and QPR have had 37. And QPR in that second, and QPR I think have got 4 goals already from corners and wide free kicks. So that's been a real asset, you know, for them at the early stage of the season. So yeah, look, it's going to be an up and at it kind of game, isn't it? But yeah, QPR, yeah, haven't really got going, but he's got something to work with. I think the squad are certainly playing for the manager. Just need a little bit more from their individuals to light up the game. We've talked before about the spine, the centre halves. I like central midfielders aren't going to let you down. I think Colback's come in as well alongside Field. He'll be back for the weekend. It's just can the guys who are in for Ilias Chair, who's still missing, can they deliver a bit of magic in the game so that they're not totally reliant on set pieces or the big guy up front.
Sam, you were on hand at the Den last week as Millwall lost against Luton. Listening, you might have seen the excellent reaction video posted from South London. Follow us on Twitter to see more of those at EFL Watler. So that defeat came after they picked up their first win against Wednesday. Josh Coburn scored in that game. I thought decent loan signing. Turns out he's injured. This is feeling like it's not going to be a great season for Millwall. I know we've spoken about that before, but yeah, mood, not great. Discuss.
No, the mood was fine on Saturday. It wasn't a particularly good game. It was very scrappy, especially the second half. I think, you know, Luton had to really kind of knuckle down second half, defend, you know, manfully and just get that win under any circumstances. Yeah, I thought it was a costly defeat for me when I left the ground, just because I feared the worst when I saw Coburn limping off in the manner that he did. I think he was helped off actually eventually, and it has come out this morning or yesterday, it's 6 to 8 weeks with a calf injury. So that is a colossal blow, considering they tracked him, I think, throughout the summer. Jake Cooper is going to miss this derby at the weekend, but should be back for Preston the following game. And that shouldn't disrupt them too much. You'd imagine Hutchison will just be a straight swap for Cooper. But obviously no Coburn just completely means they have to play slightly differently, I would suggest. Millwall, Langstaff came on, missed that really good one-on-one opportunity, but looked quite bright. And I would anticipate him leading the line. And yeah, it does feel like it's going to be a difficult season, but the numbers would suggest otherwise. I think this is something that's taken everyone quite by surprise. You know, Millwall are arguably one of the most creative sides in the division at the moment. I think they're second for XG4, most big chances missed. They've had a lot of shots and a lot of opportunities the early part of the season, which goes against what they have been historically. So I don't think there's been a huge sea change. I think they're still, as Clarkie says, going to be hugely impactful from set pieces. They're going to be back to front the majority of the time. But what they do have is Casper De Nora, a midfield player who can handle the football. And they've got some exciting forward players. Watmore, SA is a really talented young player with real drive and quality. And they also have Aziz, who they just brought in from Reading, who got a few minutes off the bench against Luton the other day. So this is kind of as creative maybe as I've seen a Millwall side in a while. And they'll go to QPR, which is always a brilliant atmosphere. They're not near neighbours, but it will be a massive contingent that goes from Millwall, and the atmosphere will be electric. And it's a game that they always want to win, Millwall at Loftus Road. So expect it to be lively. And yeah, Millwall not at it. And it will be fascinating how they can navigate the next month or two now without the big signing up top. Ivanovic, the chat that has come in as well. I don't think Neil Harris was expecting him to be ready straight after he joined, but he looks like he's going to be back in the next few weeks. So that's certainly another option for them.
We always do derbies, don't we? Let's not break from the tradition then as we look ahead to that, which can be prefixed with Weir Tees if you're using the convention of naming the home team first, albeit Tees Weir does roll off the tongue slightly easier. It's Sunderland against Middlesbrough. Sam, Sunderland knocked off top spot after that late defeat at Plymouth last week, but they've won both their home games to nil. I guess they can just write off last week, can't they? And be up for this one and we'll expect to win, I suppose.
Yeah, memory serves me right. I think they lost 4-0 in this fixture last season. Televised, wasn't
it? Had a man sent off, didn't they? Looks conceded four times in the second half.
Dan Neil, he loves a red card, Dan Neil. they wiped the floor with him.
Yeah, I think that's one of the kind of selection dilemmas for the manager there. He came back in, Dan Neil, replacing Alan Brown at Argyle. And yeah, I don't think the midfield were particularly good, especially during that second half collapse at Home Park. I would put it more down to individual errors maybe than a structural problem with Sunderland's performance. Obviously, the goalkeeper, Patterson, should have saved Edwards' winning goal, and also Dan Ballard with two really costly individual errors. He's been, you know, a terrific player for Sunderland so far. So you just got to kind of write that one off and refocus on this game. They've obviously been superb defensively, incredibly creative. Mundell now scored in three straight games. So I think him up against Ayling, I presume it would be at the weekend, will be an interesting matchup. But they can iron out those individual mistakes from last week. I'm sure they can get back to winning ways. Yeah, it'd be interesting how Middlesbrough goes. Clarkie, what do you feel they'll do in terms of that midfield? Because I would be very surprised. I think that's a really important area in this game, given what I said about Sunderland's lack of quality maybe there against Argyle. Surely Michael Carrick's not going to go with Conway and Latte Lath from the off. He'll get another midfielder in there, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, you've got Hackney and Barlasser, haven't you? You could probably stick maybe one more in there. It depends on who's available, doesn't it? In terms of fitness, because they've had so many injuries. Middlesbrough. I don't know about Johnny Housen is fit enough to be involved or not this weekend. They might want to get him on board if he is. So yeah, no, that is a good shout. I think these are two good teams. I think these are two teams that are going to be in the playoffs, actually. I think that they're going, I couldn't see either of them top two particularly, but I do think that they're capable of reaching the playoffs. I'm going to chuck some numbers at you because Borough are flying on that score. They've got, like I said, they've got a lot of players out. Best XG in the division, 9.76. They've only scored six. They've had the most shots by 15. They've had 26 more shots than Sunderland. Touches in the box, 203. The next closest, you like this, Sam, QPR, 149. So over 50 more touches inside the opposition box than any other team. And then you flip it around. They've only conceded four goals. They've got the second best expected goals against and they've faced the fewest shots. So you're looking at Borough and thinking, well, why aren't you at the top of the league? And I think just little things have gone against them. finishing obviously has let them down a little bit, and they've been punished for the odd little mistake. So I don't think there's a lot wrong. They've got a good bench as well. You know, Ben Doak is on it. Marcus Fors is coming back from injury. Yeah, I like Latte Lath, obviously. And I'm a big fan of Conway as well. You got Isaiah Jones and Azaz out wide, pretty under pressure for their places. So yeah, I think Borough can give a good account of themselves here. And no matter what happens, I think both teams will be up there.
Yeah, just to underline how good the start has been from Regis Labrice, and you know, we're very quick to criticise sometimes. The 11 starters at Plymouth were all at Sunderland last season. So it just shows you know, how quickly he has got his playing style into the players, but also is improving players immediately. So, yeah, I think he deserves enormous credit from where they were last season to be producing what they are. And yeah, both attacking teams statistically look really, really good. I'm not so sure there'll be many goals in this one. I quite like the 1-1 here. I think maybe those defensive statistics will possibly come to the fore with that additional tension that always comes with something of a derby.
Bonus prediction before we go to the predictions. It's yeah. Lot of the show.
He's getting cocky. Cocky, isn't he? Because he's leading. He just thinks he just offer up predictions for fun now. Yeah.
Let's head into League One, where Birmingham are for the moment. They are the dominant news story in the division. We're only going to add to that by talking about the American-owned club's trip to New York this weekend at the New York Stadium. I mean, of course, where they'll take on Rotherham. Sam, unbeaten in three, but only won one league game all season. Season, not quite making the smooth transition to life back in the third tier that their opponents are.
No, they're not. And yeah, me and Clarkie, obviously, just flashing back to last weekend or fortnight ago, both saw them and very underwhelmed I was by Rotherham. Don't look like a team at the moment. Don't look particularly cohesive. You know that they want the way they want to play. And I think there will be no surprise in this game. This will be quite back to front. They have put in 183 crosses so far this season. That is top. Blackpool next with 119. So the game plan is clear. They want to get those two centre forwards attacking things in the box. But I didn't think there was brilliant link up between Nombe and Johnson Clark Harris in that game that we saw. Wilkes is playing in behind them. He's playing a diamond, Steve Evans, and they're not getting great quality from wide. So I just think, given what I've just said there in terms of that lack of real cohesion right now, maybe there's going to be a formation switch in there. We know that Steve Evans has played the diamond previously at Stevenage, but he does mix up his setups in terms of the shape. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on. And there's no Liam Kelly, I think, ahead of this one. He limped off maybe, didn't he, against Charlton, so he could potentially be missing. Obviously, he's a big player for them, especially on occasion like this, and Steve Evans has been at it already, hasn't he? I think even in last week's presser, referring to Birmingham as Real Birmingham, which doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, and Harlem Globetrotters or something as well. So I think he's going to try and create, obviously, that underdog spirit, which across the season, they're not going to be in many games, but in this one, absolutely, against the Birmingham team, I'm sure Clark is going to wax lyrical about, but my goodness me, they've done a lot right, haven't they, in the short term, in terms of the coach, in terms of the recruitment. You know, a lot of these Birmingham players are not young kids, unproven. A lot of them that are coming in from the continent are experienced players that have either played internationally or at big clubs. So they're going to pull Rotherham all around. And they scored their first goal from a set piece the other day, Rotherham. So it is starting to come to fruition, but they need to take more advantage of those situations and deliver better quality for the likes of Nombe and Johnson Clark Harris, or Steve Evans, I think, has got to probably have a little rethink and a little tinker.
Got a Sapporo song, striker on loan from Forest, maybe he'll bring him in. Clarkie, talk this game up for me, please, because I was disappointed to see that both championship meetings last season finished 0-0 between them.
Oh, did they? Yeah, no, that does surprise me. Birmingham looked $1 million against Wrexham after a slightly shaky start, which has kind of become their thing. They've conceded first in three of five games, Birmingham. So, but they've turned things around for two wins and the draw from those situations. So they've showed their quality. Yeah, I was really impressed. I mean, the got great positional rotation. You know, you've got player, you've got the right back, Gardner-Hickman, that'll come into midfield 1 minute and then he'll be the widest player the next. You've got Williamson and May, who sort of, I was trying to work out, well, who's the number 10 and who's playing wide? They kind of switched it all around in that game. Very, very fluid. Stansfield, obviously, it would do him the power of good to get those two goals in such a big game. Great finishes. I thought the cross from Cochrane, the left back, was just brilliant, and he looks a really good player for them. I think the central midfield unit is going to be the best in the division. Paik and Iwata, you know, the Asian influence inside the heart of that midfield, but really, really experienced players that get English football, get British football, that they'll graft, but they've got great legs and technical quality, as we saw with Iwata's goal. You know, they've got that goal threat as well. So yeah, Birmingham, so much to like. The only thing ahead of this game that I worry about is it at the back? It's the goalie. I'm not sure about Peacock Farrell, about his dominance of the box. And they're missing Christian Bielik, who got that daft red card. And for me, he's easily their best defender. I'm not just not sold completely on Clara, who's the regular alongside him. And they're bringing Ben Davis, a summer signing, to play next to him. Not ideal ahead of a trip to Rotherham. So that's the worry. But I'm guessing most of this match will be played in Rotherham's territory.
And we're also going to talk about a mid-table outfit and a basement dweller. It's Wycombe Wanderers and Cambridge United, respectively. Adrian, after losing their first two league games, Wycombe now 3 points off the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're looking good, Wycombe. I think there's a good feel-good factor. I spoke to Duncan Alexander in the week, big Wycombe fan from The Athletic, and he said the vibes are good there and that there's real optimism that Wycombe are going to have a good season. I looked at their home record, actually, which was a problem, wasn't it, when the manager first took over? But now it's all good. Since Christmas, at Adams Park, they've won 7, drawn 4 and lost 2. The only teams they've lost to are Pompey en route to promotion and Birmingham, who are definitely en route to promotion. So they don't get beat much at home. They're a really, really solid team. They looked a good team when beating Northampton last weekend. They've scored twice in every game so far as well, which bodes well against the Cambridge team that are letting in plenty. So yeah, I think I really like the midfield that he's constructed. Josh Goen, but, you know, he's been around the block. He's a really good player. They've signed Aaron Morley from Bolton, really good footballer. And Cameron Humphreys, a young guy from Ipswich Town who was pretty highly rated coming through. So I think that's a really nice unit. And, you know, you've got McCleary and Udo down the wings as well, wreaking a bit of havoc. So, yeah, I fancy Wycombe to beat Cambridge this weekend.
I do too, Sam, because it's not really much of a stretch given that Cambridge haven't won a game this season. Am I going to be able to say there's a monk in the Abbey for much longer, or might this be the last weekend?
No, I don't think so, because I think they are changing how they do things. Like, you know, I've spoken about a couple of teams already today. I think Gary Monk, you know, in his managerial career to date, hasn't always been that bothered about having the ball. Think about his time at Birmingham in particular. But here at Cambridge, they're absolutely having more possession. That's inevitable considering, you know, the way Mark Bonner used to do things, albeit so successfully. You know, they're very much, you know, low block team, play a little bit more on the counter, probably play some long balls. Neil Harris, likewise. So I think this is probably a decision that comes from above as well. Yeah. And they signed some good players. They signed a lot of experienced players. I don't think any of them were given that they were going to come in and immediately catapult them to the different end of the table. But a lot of these players haven't been fit. Talking about Gardner, Taylor Richards, Loft. There's a few other players that haven't been available for one reason or another. I think Lavery's now going to be missing, who's probably going to be one of their main sources of goals with an injury that's going to keep him out. So I think they have to show patience as well, given what they're going through. And if you look at the performance at Mansfield, they actually shaded that game. They got done by a brilliant Lee Gregory finish, who was unlucky to miss out on player of the week. And the scramble I referred to was Cambridge laying siege to the Mansfield goal in the last minute or two. So, you know, this was a game they could have quite well got something out of. So I wouldn't be too hasty in writing them off. And also the numbers, I won't go too in depth. It feels like we've done a lot today, but you know, the middle of the table for XG and for shots and XG against, you know, maybe the position's very unflattering at the moment. Maybe the performances haven't been that bad. So I don't see this being a, you know, a walk in the park for Wickham. But of course, you know, have to be heavy favourites.
Yeah, you would have thought so. League Two-wise, we played six games, so it's now legit to look at the table and make some conclusions. Our eye is naturally drawn toward the top of the table where we find first place Notts County and the Gillingham side, who sit just a point and a place below the Magpies. Notts already, Sam, the only unbeaten team in League Two. Took Stuart Maynard a while, didn't it, to work things out at Meadow Lane, but the signs are that he's done that now.
And I saw him going into Harrogate. This is a big reveal, this. Sorry, Stuart, if you're listening, because we are. He is a friend of a friend. I saw him going into Harrogate against Donny last Thursday night in full Notts County clobber.
Chrissy,
what do you think of that? What do you think? I'm sure he was in the posh seats, if there is such a thing at Harrogate, and that's not a stab at them. That is a very, very lovely little football ground, Harrogate.
You don't wear club apparel outside of your training ground or match day environment. You don't go somewhere else wearing the club gear, do you?
I think the lower you go down, you often see that. So, for example, if I'm at Hampton and Richmond, you will see, like, you know, a scout in a QPR top. You wouldn't see the top brass. Well,
was it a trackie or was it a coat?
Trackie, I think.
I don't think you can go in a trackie. I just don't think you can. Can you? I mean, obviously you can.
He came in the corner, but I imagine he was making his way around. Sorry, Stuart, for not saying hello and just hammering you on the podcast. But I thought it was worth bringing.
If you know him, let's get him on the pod. Come on.
Let's get him on the pod.
He's not coming on now, is he?
Come on and say
it. It's a good icebreaker, right?
Yeah, it's a good icebreaker. So I was at an under-23s game parking. You know what I mean? Watching my starlets in the afternoon. Anyway, I mean, not a great deal has changed, I wouldn't suggest, in terms of they are amazing going forward. I mean, you only have to look at, like, the numbers to see that. They've got four players on three or more goals, and they've got those four players are in the top 10, I think, for goal involvements. They're just incredibly creative. You could argue they've got four of the most creative players in the division in Jody Jones. Jatta, I think, Clarkey spoke of early part of the season. Crowley gets another mention. And, of course, David McGoldrick, who is scoring some beauty still. They scored four goals from outside the box so far this season. Highest XG, highest possession. This is a really good team. And a little like Cambridge, maybe, it's a new look back five, very much so. I think it's four of the back five are new signings. Alex Bass in goal, Platt they took from Bradford. So naturally, you're not going to become incredibly stingy defensively overnight if it's been a problem, you know, over the last 12 months or so, defending too many goals. So I'd give them a little bit of leeway in that regard, but they've scored two or more goals in each of the last five games after their goalless draw at Tranmere. And this is the best attack in the division against the meanest defence at the weekend. So fascinating to see how it goes. But I'm really pleased after slaughtering him. I didn't slaughter him. Clarkey slaughtered him. After that big reveal a few moments ago that he's turned things around, because that could have been really difficult if he'd have not made things work last season and not stabilised things. It would have been difficult to see where his next role would have been in the EFL. So brilliant that his work at the lower level, his brilliant work, is now coming to fruition in the Football League.
Stepped all over my segue there, Sam, but I was going to say they're not going to find it easy to score goals in this game necessarily, Adrian. Clean sheets in four of six league games so far for the club.
Yeah, it's a clash of styles, isn't it? You know, Gillingham are going to sit there and soak it up and back themselves to keep them at bay, and then look to break and maybe punish them from a set piece. Of their nine goals, four have come from set pieces and three have come from counter-attacks. So we know what they're going to be about. Gillingham maybe been a bit lucky not to concede more. You know, they've had to absorb a lot of shots, a lot of pressure. And haven't scored that many, but they are a solid team. And they could, they'll set out to frustrate Notts County, but frustrating those front guys at the moment is easier said than done.
Right, Clark, he's tight for time. So we're going to whip through predictions here. I'll just tell you that last week, Sam got 2 points, Adrian got 1 point, and I got no points. That's because Sam correctly predicted that West Brom would beat Portsmouth and that Blackpool would beat Exeter. So yeah, not great.
Me and you are level. Me and you, Matt, are on 8 points and Sam is on 14.
Wow, okay. Streaking away with it. We need to make some inroads then. Clarky, give me your prediction for Bristol City v Oxford, please.
1-0. Bristol, yeah, conceding too many goals at the moment. Oxford punching above expectations. I think they can get a point there.
I'm going 0-1 in the Liam Manning Classico. So an Oxford win. What do you reckon, Sam?
Yeah, it's a big game for Liam Manning, isn't it? I love this, the way you two have gone. I'll happily take Bristol City in this one. 2-0 Bristol City.
Wow, okay, convincing. Stockport Orient, what do you reckon, Clarky?
I think I'm going to go with Stockport. Obviously, they've been really good at home so far this season. It's been tough for Leighton Orient, but listening to Sam earlier, you know, giving them props, he thinks they'll come good. Stockport away is one of the toughest games at the moment for any team in the division. 1-0 Stockport.
Right, I saw Stockport demolish Everton's essentially under 18 side actually on Thursday, and Stockport made a bunch of changes but looked pretty good anyway. I'm going 3-1 here for the other team called the Hatters. What about you, Sam?
I was going to go for a narrow Stockport win, but given what you two have said, I'm going to go for Orient. Ooh. Inevitably to make 10 changes from the week's defeat at Brentford to get a point. I'm going to go for 1-1.
Showboating.
Nice. On Monday night, last week we had Birmingham v Wrexham. Next week we get Fleetwood v Morecambe. Clarky, what's going to happen in this one?
Well, I'll let Sam go. I mean, it's unfair that I go first every time. You know, I'll let him have first dibs. I know he's winning and stuff, but...
Morecambe had a 3-3, didn't they? But they are struggling. I'm going to go for another home win. 2-1 Fleetwood.
I'll go 4-0. Why not? What about you, Adrian?
2-0. 2-0 to the COD Army.
Good stuff. Let me remind you before we go that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It's for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus. Remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at EFL What, the other social media channels at What the EFL. A very, very quick tweet of the week to finish off. Clarky, I'll get your take on it first. It comes from Kane Kessler Hayden of Preston, who says, "What a group of lads, exclamation mark. Hard fought win and into the hat emoji. Support was immense, even after that back pass, Ben. Crying with laughter emoji. Thank you all. Blue heart, white heart." Not great grammar, but sincere content, I think.
No, I'm all for this. I think great use of the top hat emoji. Took the piss out of himself with the poor penalty that he missed in the shootout. And what struck me most about this tweet of the week is the responses. So many people on the responses are saying, "Didn't realise you were that quick. You need to get your FIFA rankings or your FIFA ratings changed. You need your defo 90s in the speed," and all this nonsense. So yeah, it's just the way the younger generation sort of look at when they watch football, they think about FIFA ratings. It's not something I do, and I don't think you guys do either. But there you go.
No, definitely not. But are you in this though, Sam? I think because he's written the word hat and then put the emoji in, which is quite parking.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I seem to remember him from a brief loan spell at Swindon, being really good and quite good fun with the press, and well, open to come in and having a good chat. And so I like the self-deprecation. I think that hat can only be used for Luton Town, I'm afraid. I'd like to see it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And Stockport, you need to throw a different hat into the mix there. But other than that, good stuff from a good lad.
Excellent. Good stuff from you two this week as well. Thank you very much for listening. Tell a friend if you like to. We're always trying to get more listeners on board. We'll be back with another show next week. Until then, bye for now.